right, here we are. Welcome back to Book Wave, the book club podcast. We're back here for another Wavecast. I'm your host, Scott, joined today by Pat.
A.M.
Jason.
Hey, easy.
And William.
Hello.
And today we're just having a little bit of a New Year's special, and my question to the three of you, plus anybody listening at home, is what did you learn from the chaos of 2020, and how are you going to take that into 2021? Whoever wants to start, just jump in.
Well, I'll start. Last year was acknowledgeably crazy, right? But I think everybody assumes that this next year, 2021, is going to be the end of like all, you know, problems. And that's just not the case, right? It's not realistic. And I've been thinking, you know, like about the first books that we started reading. I think, you know, Tribe, and we were reading Marcus Aurelius, Meditations. And so I've been kind of focused on Stoicism and like how to apply it to my daily life. Sorry to interrupt you, Will.
That's all right. I'm used to it after last year, people speaking over me, freaking out. I think, you know, I like what you're saying, Jason, because I've been thinking about the books we were reading 2 years ago that were like, you know, dip your toe in the water philosophy books, like the dialogues of Socrates, and I think we did the Tao Te Ching, right? And, you know, that stuff was nice. And then, you know, somewhere around the course of our first year, we were like, let's do the Bible. And I have had so many nihilistic thoughts in the past couple months as 2020 came to an end and winter encroached up here in the north. And it's been just a real fight to get past the stressful and negative and overthinkingness that has been consuming me. And I don't know if it's because I've been reading Nietzsche and the Bible and Uncle Tom's Cabin this past year, but it's I think what I'm going to bring into 2021 is the opposite of what I brought into 2020. And what I brought into 2020 was I'm going to have a great year and live in this fake reality where bad things don't happen and I'm not overwhelmed by them. And this year I'm going to expect the worst and hope for the best and try and keep myself calm and accepting reality, because it doesn't feel like 2020 ended. There's been a lot of stuff going on in my personal life and with my friends and my family that has just kind of been, and with winter, I mean, what a bad way to start the year. So yeah. I'm just going to try and not make things more stressful.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people, myself included, can relate to that, considering the pandemic, all of the political business. Like, we don't have to talk about any of that, but it's all looming over us, so it's worth acknowledging. So what do you think, Pat?
Well, to go off on what Jason started on, just reading more books and just expanding the podcast has been a really good thing. And I posted to all of you the stats of our podcast, which have been really good. And just focusing on that was a really good thing. And just having a diverse range of different books and different themes and topics that we have been discussing. And we ended up having our first, Scott, you went on your with Paul Fenderclay thing. I mean, and everything, and that's been a good thing. So, and just watching that grow during the midst of all the chaos that's going on right now, it was surprisingly effective for the four of us who simply want to get together and discuss these very complex and interesting topics from classic literature. And that has brought us, not just the four of us, but pretty much everyone around the world has been finding us and listening to us and just sticking around until the very end of the year and going beyond that. And another thing too is just the fact that I've been thinking about a lot about what's really going on and trying not to get too attached to everything that's going on in the media and everything. And I've caught this kind of topic when I listened to Matthew McConaughey and his interviews with various people, including his so-called memoir, which I wouldn't even call it that, Green Lights. And amidst all the exposure that he has gone through throughout his career, and also remaining grounded to who he really is as a person, it's just very important not to get riled up and throw daggers at people that we don't know who are constantly trying to interfere with us, with our own living, whether it be, you know, just simply asking questions or trying to figure out what our day has been like, or even going as far as to know what our views are with the world and who do we trust and who do we not trust and all that jazz. And just simply take it for what it is and saying, I don't have anything to do with this person or this thing. I'm just going to simply remain grounded where I am. I'm not going to take it out on anybody else. I'm just going to let things flow for a bit. And just let that be. So.
Yeah, I like that.
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. He seems like, at first glance, he seems like a source that you really wouldn't learn much about. But, you know, maybe I should start paying more attention to the guy. Maybe I'm guilty of judging a book by its cover, saying, oh, why do I have to listen to another actor? We've got enough of those opinions already. But, yeah. I like everything you said there, Pat. And you mentioned my interview with Paul Vanderclay, and that's one thing that I want to focus on more, is kind of growing the channel out, getting more people on board, maybe getting some more guests on here. We're going to have to, you know, figure out how when we're going to get Paul on the channel again, now that all of the holiday craziness is behind us.
Indeed.
Yeah, I think that should be a good goal for us this year. Guesting and getting guests on. That's the way. We need to find our people, get out of our own little bubble and expand it on the internet as much as we can, as we can't do it in the real world.
Yeah.
And since we've read a lot of books last year, what was some takeaways from any of the books that we've read?
Well, we could start with the two Ernest Hemingway books. I think those were both this year, right? Or last year.
Yep.
So, like, after reading Hemingway, I got a whole different understanding of Stoicism. Because, you know, like Jason mentioned, we started this whole thing with Marcus Aurelius and Meditations. So we've all been, like, kind of using the Stoic ideas, but after reading what Hemingway had to say, it's like, okay, this is how, like, you can be, like, entirely, like, the perfect example of a Stoic, but not practice Stoicism per se, because we know he was deeply religious, and, like, just seeing all of the, like, the overlap that he brought from Christianity, that I just saw as completely Stoic thought. So that was like a huge transformation for me in my own psyche, just seeing Stoicism as, you know, like showing up in other worldviews, not just being a worldview of its own, and kind of making the same comparisons to like Ayn Rand and even a lot of the stuff in the Bible. Like, you don't have to be a Christian to say that you love all the lessons of the Bible or something like that. You don't have to be a Stoic to say, like, these aspects of Stoicism have gotten me to where I am today.
Yeah, and I'm kind of looking at ways of last year where maybe I was lazy and trying to, like, hone, you know, some skills, you know, discipline and meditation and yoga. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple aspects that been working on. But you mentioned that we were reading the Bible, and I was thinking back about last year and how I want this year to go forward. And I was thinking of like the kings from Samuel and the book of Kings, and how they failed because of their like foolishness. And so, you know, just trying to identify, you know, aspects of my life that maybe I'm carrying too much shit around, or I'm acting foolish, and trying to basically discover the best version of myself is, I think, what I'm trying to say.
I thought you were going to make that about Trump for a second, but...
No, we agreed not to talk about political shit.
I don't know if I have any profound or insightful takeaways from the books we read. I know that there's been a great deal of demystification to the Old Testament for me personally. This four stages of learning something, where you have unconscious incompetence, and then conscious incompetence, and then conscious competence, and then unconscious competence. So I'm now conscious of the areas I was ignorant, sort of in that second stage. But I'm really looking forward to reading the Gospels and having that in my library, quote unquote. But I don't want to rush through the Old Testament either. It's just nothing has been as I expected it to be. And I think that's another thing that I'm going to be taking into 2021. It's just suspending expectations and just accepting reality. Because that's where every single triggered emotion comes from. You're just like, if you were expecting the reality of the situation, you wouldn't have stress and disappointment to the degree that I have certainly experienced in the past year.
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting. Well, is that mostly from the fact that you want to follow these kinds of expectations based on what other people say? Or is it just because you have set these up for yourself, but not exactly planned it as you thought it would be?
Can you be more specific? I just got lost in your sentence.
Did you not specifically plan out your expectations for the new year or anything like that?
No, I definitely did. I planned to have a great year, and I didn't plan to have a real year. And I think that was my big problem. I was just going to have success in business, and I was going to bang off all of my goals. And when, you know, we had a lot of unexpected things happen, just even in our family, let alone in the world, that was like, oh, this is what I'm doing now, and it's taking me away from what I thought I was going to be doing. And not expecting, you know, the meandering curve of progress, and not expecting to completely get off the path and build a house and hang out there, because you can't go anywhere. The way is blocked, and this thing is a higher priority. And, you know, being upset about that because it wasn't anticipated. And it's like, you know, life happens, and you have to be able to show up in spite of the circumstances and not make it harder for everyone else involved by being upset about what's going on. And I think it was too easy for me to fall into that trap of, well, I can't control this situation, and that's destructive.
Yeah.
Because you can't control anything.
It's like not controlling the situation, at the same time not understanding the situation fully. Because I know when I was at my lowest state of mind, I described it as not being able to see the progress bar. Like, if you're just like trying to live your life and you have no expectation of what's about to happen, or you have the complete opposite expectation of what's about to happen, you think you're 70% of the way there, but as soon as you get to page 5, you're like, okay, all of that progress is null. We're actually at 0. So it's like when you keep having that expectation of like, okay, I know what I'm talking about, or I don't know what I'm talking about, it's a lot easier to just take the Socratean route and just say, all that I know is that I know nothing. And then you'll never be disappointed by your own expectations.
And it's like, that phrase, you know, when you're wearing rose-tinted glasses, all the red flags just look like flags. It's like the opposite of that, where you, when you're upset, you can't see any of the successes. You don't remember any of the progress you made. Like, I literally had so many weeks where it was like, I brought in money, brought in clients, did something for my personal life, did something for my hobby, did something for my wife, did something for my father. And then I'd get to Saturday and be like, well, I've done nothing this week. I'm terrible. It's just like, I was in the wrong state of mind and I wasn't journaling or putting up progress trackers. And it's like, you need a heads up display IRL. Like, you need to know what your health bar is at and how close you are to completing the quest line and how many quests you've completed. Because if you don't have any of that data when you're low, it's hard.
Will, didn't you just have like a snowboarding accident or some kind of event with the stairs?
I mean, yeah, I definitely just fell down the staircase and banged every part of my body. I never fell, though. I consistently fell. I didn't land on the ground. I just kept going. My first foot slipped out, and then I banged every single stair on the way down, hitting my body in this small stairwell. And then I got to the bottom, I stood up, I screamed out, and I made a coffee. And every day since, it's been 2 days, I've just gotten more and more stiff. And it's like, I would have gladly been hitting my drop-in ramp since my Horseshoe Resort season pass is null in the middle of this lockdown. But it was like, I couldn't walk up my stairs. I couldn't put pressure on my left foot yesterday.
So, like, you know, after getting hurt like that, does it affect your outlook on, you know, the rest of your world? Like, does everything seem more difficult? And the reason I'm asking is because back in 2019, going into 2020, I was like saying, just like everybody else was saying, oh, this is going to be the best year. You're swinging into like hopefulness from like 2019 being crazy. We're hopefully going to have an awesome year. But I think as long as that isn't like unfounded expectations, where maybe the idea is, you know, that you're tough and resilient so that when you do approach eventual obstacles and challenges, you know that you're going to overcome them, so you can still kind of have a, I guess, hopeful outlook, as long as it's, you know, founded in some kind of reality.
I think, honestly, the worse my physical injuries, the better my outlook on the stuff I have to do. I think it's really easy for me when I can't even stand on my own 2 feet to think about how much I want to get done and how much more productive I'd like to be when my body's healthy. But when my mind is unhealthy, it's not like that. Because when you can point to the part of your body and say, well, if I didn't have this, I'd be sitting in my chair doing my work. It's a no-brainer. You know what you need to do and you wish you could do it. But when you're just bogged down by the mental mire, it's a whole other world for me. And I think what I really want to focus on is just the one steps. And breaking every single goal down into a million simple steps. Like, you know, push the power button on the computer. Log in. Like, can you do that? Can you get to your computer and log in and do the work? Can you get out of bed and instead of just, you know, develop the best video game this year? Like, type 50 words this morning. Just small stuff.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to the old saying, you know, just taking in every small detail of nature and everything. Don't think about the big stuff and everything, because sometimes the smallest stuff has the greatest impact or the great effect.
Yeah, and it's like I was getting stuck in this mentality probably 3 or 4 times throughout last year where I was like, well, I can't eat an elephant.
Yeah, and
you
I was also kind of in a funk too, sometime in November, and that was when I got sick, and didn't really have that kind of energy to either write or do voiceover. I just kind of just sat with my own thoughts and everything, just swooshing around and everything, and not doing much. But in regards to just thinking about just the smaller details to work on turn on the computer, log in, all that stuff. I think the one thing that I want to do is to do the same thing in regards to what I want to accomplish in life. Now, that may sound like the same thing, but what I'm talking about specifically is when you want to do something in life, like write a novel or do voiceover or build a video game, the one thing you think about first is the outcome and what you expected it would be to look like. But when you think about that often, sometimes, at least for me, you're kind of just being stuck at square one. And the more you fantasize about it, the less often you get things done to get to that point. But I think it would be best to just think about what the next step is in that outcome and just sort of build it up from there. Now you see it. And then once you're done meditating on that, you can go to the workflow, that the working state, and just start applying square one, square two, square three, and so on for that day, and just work on those. And then you can kind of reflect on what you've done for the day, and then do the same thing tomorrow. You can think about the outcome in stage three or stage four, and then you gravitate towards back reality stage. You think about how you want to work today, stage four, stage five, and so on. So that's kind of the way that I've been thinking about in terms of doing this, you know, kind of doing this podcast or doing voiceover or writing my novel, and just figuring out where it goes from day to day and just let it go on from there.
It kind of sounds like you're talking about the philosophy, there is no try, there is only do. And what I hear you saying is, don't just say something, don't just think about what you want as the end goal, actually do the work, fill in the steps, take care of the basic necessities that would eventualize that that outcome you want.
Yeah. Grandmaster Yoda coming into this podcast.
And I think the one cool thing about podcasts too is everybody has them nowadays, right? But they kind of act as an interactive journal in a way. You know, I document a lot of my notes on my smartphone, and these podcasts are also a way to capture, you know, some of my thoughts and some of everyone's thoughts here. But I think one interesting thing to do for this new year would actually be to go back to a paper journal, because I kind of had a bit of a challenge this last week where my old phone would no longer work. And so I had to get a new phone, and I realized that some of my notes from last year's, from some of the books that we read last year were, you know, or they're stuck on the old device. So if I had had a paper journal, I think that would be
It'd be more a good thing. It would work.
Mm-hmm. And a hard book, that'll keep forever. You can go back 20 years from now and not have to think, oh, where was that old hard drive, or where did I save that, or anything like that. It's just, oh no, it's in my pile of notebooks labeled on the front, or however you organize it all. And like, the whole, like, having a podcast thing has been kind of wild, because, like, I don't post on social media at all anymore. Like, it's taken away the urge in general to just go on Facebook and say, I have a problem with the way things are. And, like, having a podcast is, like, I can articulate those thoughts without, you know, putting my foot in my mouth or making an ass of myself. So that's been
really, and it's nice. Authentic. I mean, in this kind of platform, you have to be genuine. You know, if you're being inauthentic, you'll get called out. And that's the cool thing about this. It's like a live interactive experience where through these four people, you know, each one of us, we're like part of a network, part of just, you know, a node in a network. And if you followed all the nodes to who this reaches, you know, it's going to end up Kevin Bacon's going to be watching.
Oh, man.
And it's nice to actually have a space where we can go and we can talk to each other about the things we're interested in instead of annoying the people in our life and on social media, because
yes,
that's what's happening is people are trying to talk to people about things that they're just not interested in. It's like, imagine if you had a great inspiring conversation about all that stuff you keep annoying all your friends with, and then you went and hung out with your friends and you could listen to them and care what they have to say and not be upset about the fact that you don't have time to talk.
I tried to make that exact point on Facebook this morning on someone else's status. Like, I don't post statuses for myself, but if I see something from, you know, someone who I know has their brain turned on, I'm going to say, you know, maybe you're not seeing the whole picture here. There's another side to this story. It's so, yeah. But like when most people just go on Facebook and they see, oh, look, someone who, you know, I haven't talked to in two or three years, whatever, they've started just ranting about politics for everyone on their timeline to see. And, you know, most people are going to say, I don't want to see that when I'm looking at dog and cat pictures on Facebook. I'm here to look at, you know, pictures of my grandchildren, and now there's people ranting about politics. You know, Marshall McLuhan says the medium is the message. So you got to think about that when you're choosing which medium to put your stance on.
And in a way,
honestly, say that louder for the kids at the back.
And in a way, podcasts like this also develop a sense of history and personal growth. They are recorded forever, and they can be accessed at any time. They can be archived and everything. And it's kind of like a progress bar about how we're doing. And in some ways, and it could be very grateful to see how our audience takes a podcast like this one and see how well it affects their personal lives.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys ever read any Robert Anton Wilson or Tim Leary?
I've read a little bit of Tim Leary, but the first one, I've just heard the name. I might be familiar with some of their content from podcasts and stuff.
Nope.
Well, I just wanted to check in. You know, I'm okay. Ask, are you guys okay?
Hmm.
What?
Robert Anton Wilson and Tim Leary have this idea. It's the eight sections of consciousness. And there's kind of like this graph that everybody falls on where you're either one of these four areas. So one part of the graph is identified with the feeling of I'm okay and you're okay. And another part of the graph would be I'm not okay, but you're okay. And so it's, and there could be like the I'm not okay and you're not okay, and I'm not okay but you're okay. So there's like four different, I guess, streams of consciousness that somebody could fall into. And I was
like,
just
almost like degradations of chaos too, because if you're living in the mindset of like I'm okay, you're okay, we have order between us and we can all communicate. But if it's like, I'm not okay, but you're okay, it's, I hate myself, and everything you say actually has meaning, and everything I say doesn't. So.
Yeah, exactly. I've never heard of it referred to as that, degradations of chaos.
That's just what popped into my head. Like, I actually haven't heard this before. You just explained it to me. But that's what fired off in my brain when you said that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, just going into this new year, that's where I find myself, on the quadrant.
You're okay?
I'm okay, and you're okay.
So is it like is it like a description of like your relationships, or just like how you see anybody else?
Yeah, it's kind of a description of how you perceive the world around you.
Okay.
You know, are there threats out there? Can you identify those threats? It was just something that popped into my head, you know, how we're starting a new year and relatively I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Yeah, it was a little stressful at the start of the year where I was like, you know, 2021, can we just take a 2-week break and, you know, start again later? But yeah, that's interesting. I'll have to do some more reading and meditating on that. I think there has to be a lot to that. Because I see like a lot of people with the mindset of, you know, I'm okay, you're not okay.
But you're not okay, yeah.
On like social media is filled with that. So yeah, I don't know if the best way to tackle that issue is to say, you know, maybe you're not 100% okay, or, you know, these guys who you don't think are okay too. I think there's got to be some humility attached to that. But I guess
two things popped into my head.
Go ahead.
So the first is the meme, "This is fine." When we were camping, camping in the middle of summer and it started hailing, like in the middle of the summer, hail, like this thick. This is fine. And then we've been watching How I Met Your Mother because I like to watch things 20 years too late. And one of the episodes, one of the characters is like freaking out at the other character. And she's like, "No, you don't get it. They think they're happy, but they're not. And they think they're happy because they feel happy, but that's not real happiness." It's like, she was right. Yeah. Like, they were lying to themselves and they felt happy, but they weren't happy. And it wasn't a sustainable happiness. And
yeah, to me, that's the difference. To me, that's the difference between happiness and meaning. Like, too many people don't understand the fundamental difference between those two things. Like, you can be happy once a day and overall miserable for 99% of your life. You can be in a relationship where every day they make you smile and thankful to be alive, but at the same time, it's toxic and it's eating away at your life. So, like you said, two things can be true at once.
It's interesting you say that, Scott, because I was listening to a Zen monk talk, and he was referring and describing how his day goes by and how like 98% of his day is just blah, just kind of mundane. It's, you know, the sensation of your clothes on your skin or the wind blowing by your hair. It's not really anything to write home about. And only like 1% of your day is spent happy, and maybe 1% is spent in misery. And it's important to take stock of, you know, what percentage of your day are you focused on? Where, you know, a lot of people just focus on the misery and not acknowledge the small bit of happiness, or try to grow that, try to change the percentages.
And I guess the other thing to add is, it kind of reminds me of, you know, going off on the "this is fine" meme. Sometimes I've noticed that some people say that everything's fine and everything, and that they're happy with things are.
But and to then me, they go home and start crying and having a mental breakdown.
Which leads to the idea of delusional optimism.
Yeah.
Like, that's another trap to fall into. That's another toxic thing, because even if we think that we are ready for the future and that we're ready to, you know, take it on, sometimes we often feel like it's like, okay, maybe this is not a good idea. I think I'm missing something, or or even worse, they think they feel happy and ready to take on the future, but deep down, they kind of have some skeletons in the closet. They have something that they know is, you know, part of the future, and they don't know how to put it together. And there are some people that call them out for it. So, and that's another toxic thing that I recently thought of.
Just to be clear, you used the term delusional optimism.
Yeah, right? Fake optimism.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, delusion is considered in Zen like one of the three roots of poison of the mind. Delusion, hatred, and greed.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't know. I have a weird kind of optimism. Like, when I have conversations with people, it's clear to me that I'm the optimist in the group or whatever, because I have, like, this unhinged optimism that comes from, like, a form of stoicism, I guess. Like, if your first thought when you're having a problem is, I can't control the problem, I can control my reaction to the problem, it lets you think a lot easier about the problem. It's just like, okay, I have to accept the facts first, and then the optimism comes into play afterwards. And I don't know, I might be a little bit delusional about most things too, but I generally look at the brighter side of things. The glass is always half full. Sometimes it's even on its way to filling up, in my view, so.
That's actually really good. That's actually quite healthy to think about.
Yeah, despite like some of the chaos that has poured over into this year and some of the political stuff that's happened in the U.S. that we're not talking about.
Or in Canada.
Ultimately,
you think we're happy about politics up here
too,
either?
But ultimately, I'm optimistic. But it's not what Pat would describe as delusional optimism. It's more of a stoic optimism and kind of looking at challenges and just the mental commentary being, is that so?
Yeah.
Is that so?
My favorite Akira the Dawn wave is the Marcus Aurelius album that he did. And like the one line that pops into my head a lot is, the world is maintained by change and the elements within it. And it's just, yeah, shit's gonna happen. Things are gonna go wrong. Everything is gonna go sideways at some point. That's how it functions. That's just not something that happens. It's all following some kind of vague pattern behind the scenes. Like, you can't just stagnate. Like, a political system can't be the same forever, whether it's, you know, the Empire of the Romans or the Empire of the Americans. It's like, it might not be at the point where we have to, you know, tear it all down, but things change. Same with religion. Like, I see a lot of religious fundamentalists who say the Bible's the word of God, everything in it is literally and physically true, we have to follow it to the letter. I'm like, most Christians don't believe that. If you really look at the way they think, they understand that religion has evolved, it's changed throughout the years, and necessarily so. You just have to like gauge and measure which of those changes are going to be beneficial and which ones are going to create the most chaos and the most damage.
Yeah.
Am I tiring you, Will?
No, no. But it'd be a good drinking game for this video. Take a shot every time I yawn. Oh my god. Just really warm in my office today.
I don't know if you guys can see, it's snowing here.
Yeah.
Pretty big fluffy flakes.
And I don't know why, but every time an American tells me that it's snowing, I just get a little bit of a micro trigger. Like, I can see the ground. Are you sure that's snow?
I was literally about to say, let's not get hasty. This is a Texas snow, not a Canada snow.
Your rain is just rare, confused.
Well, if it makes it you better, snowed. Well, it's raining over here.
Yeah, as it should be.
It reminds me of an episode of King of the Hill where, like, there is an outside barbecue or whatever with Hank, and then it starts to snow and everyone just starts to panic. They just start screaming and running around in circles like, it's snowing! It's the end of the world! We're not prepared.
Sounds like half of our barbecues.
And I'm just like, what? How do you barbecue without it snowing outside? You only get to do that half the year then.
Half the year? Try 2 months.
Yeah.
Especially where you are.
It all comes down to, like, just perspective, you know? Like, it's so easy to say that, you know, oh, that's snow, eh? Well, you don't even know. But, like, I don't know. It's comparatively, like, yeah, I bet it's freaking cold where you are, but here it's probably the same temperature, and I'm saying it's warm, so... Like, perspective is the key to everything. That's my core belief right there. One of my core beliefs, that perspective is the key to everything. You can't understand the other side until you really put the effort into understanding their perspective.
You just reminded me of something. So I don't even know how I'm gonna open up this statement, but you know how people have it hard sometimes, and people just completely don't understand it, and then people get defensive and they say, well, you try it. Like, you imagine walking a mile in my shoes. And it's like, I actually started imagining what it was like from other people's perspectives just throughout the day recently, where it's like, I wonder what I look like to someone who isn't me, who's seeing me through their own lens of experience and perspective. And it's like, literally, like, we have an imagination. We are half creative, we are half logical. So, like, actually imagine when you're pissed off at a child for doing something wrong. Like, imagine being that child and looking through their own eyes at the world and get that perspective. Because the minute you actually imagine looking through their own eyes, it changes the way your brain thinks. You start being informed by your unconscious, all of the things and the beliefs that this person might think and experience outside of your own reality. But to literally imagine it instead of hypothetical, oh yeah, I imagine, like, no, imagine it.
It works on the positive spectrum too. I think Jordan Peterson talks about this at some points too, but like when, if you're in a state of mind where you literally hate yourself and you think the world would be better off without you, and then you talk to, like, a good friend who says, you know, life would be shittier if I didn't have you as a friend. And you hear that from someone, it literally changes the way you perceive reality. Because, like, everybody that you know, like, has a different image of you in their head. Like, no one thinks the same thing about you. And it's important to understand that, because then it's like, you don't have to think about yourself in the network of all of humanity. You can shrink that down temporarily to you in the network of, you know, your intimate relationships, your close friends, your family. And once you see value in yourself from their perspective, you can see value in yourself from your own perspective too.
And it's almost like, instead of wasting your mental energy mind reading the most worst terrible thing that this person could think of you, you don't even have to go to the worst. Like, the rate at which we mind read other people and then think, oh yeah, that they're probably thinking negatively of me, instead of, like, imagining, you know, what they might suppose and impersonating them, instead of trying to figure out what they're thinking, why don't you actually think about what they would do based on how well you know them? Because as soon as you shift to impersonation, you start saying all sorts of surprising things that you wouldn't have thought that they were thinking about you. But
yeah.
And this conversation makes me want to imagine the David Foster Wallace Wave album.
Hmm. Which part specifically? Wave.
Just imagining getting stuck in traffic, going to the grocery store late in, right, late in the day, picking up groceries and thinking about the cashier. That speech, that part of his speech in particular is what I'm imagining about.
Yeah. Well, this perception, I think, also transcends multiple layers, because it's going to affect how you treat the world around you. But it's also going to, I think, get internalized. It gets internalized on like a physiological, immunological level too. If you hate yourself, your cells aren't possibly going to be as healthy as they could, because, you know, why would your body need to spend resources and energy on something that you're telling it is worthless?
Yeah, you need to learn to give yourself permission to kind of integrate these ideas, because you'll get infected without your consent by a bunch of nonsense. Like in that David Foster Wallace speech where he describes how, you know, you could just dwell on the fact that all these people around you are driving these like huge expensive trucks with these like bumper stickers that just spout nonsense that you don't agree with, and, you know, just keep dwelling on the horrid acts of all these other people. And then you hear in the background, you know, all these like college students or university students that he's giving the speech to start cheering, like, yeah, those guys all suck. And then like David Foster Wallace himself has to stop himself and say, you see, this is an example of how not to think. You're completely missing the point here. So like you really have to analyze your own opinions about a lot of these things, because you just start to agree with the mob at a certain point and say, like, yeah, all those guys in these 4x4 trucks just spewing gasoline into the atmosphere, they're all useless rednecks and this or that. Or you could think, like, maybe that guy speeding down the highway is rushing his wife to the hospital. Think for a second what could be happening.
Yeah, like, just, like, imagine if, you know, something had have happened that would have made it completely reasonable for the behavior. Like, so, assuming people have good intentions, what would they have to believe to do the thing that you don't agree with? And could you imagine that that was completely reasonable of them? And it's like, that whole imagining what other people might be thinking, and then, you know, taking it a step farther and looking at the both of you in a conflict and saying, how are we the exact same and fighting for the exact same thing and completely missing both of our points?
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever read any superhero comic in your life, you've heard the line from the villain, oh, you're not so different, you and I. Like, yeah, that's because you both see yourself as the hero. You're both working towards a better world, and you're taking different routes to get there. If you didn't just, you know, fist fight each other all the time and lock up Lex Luthor in jail, you know, try to keep him from the population, if the two of you worked together, you'd save the world. It's as simple as that. Like, the Ubermensch, the Superman, plus the intellectual, plus the objectivist, plus the communist, like, mix it together to find what actually works. Don't just go off to one side and say, I have the right answer, and I'm not willing to hear your answer to the same question. Because that gets
you
nowhere.
The problem is people are so quick to suspend critical thinking. And with social media, it's so easy to find people that agree with you, and then you don't have to think or do any of the hard work that would, you know, inevitably lead to the fact that you might have to reevaluate your beliefs in the world. And the notion that a mob is the beliefs of the individuals, or that the individuals accept the behaviors of the mob, is so short-sighted, and it's just ignorant. Like, things happen when you get a bunch of angry people together that transcends their own emotional feelings and beliefs, and then it's uncontrollable, and it's like you probably shouldn't do that. Like, let's leave the pitchforks and torches at home, and let's do this more reasonably. Let's have a bake sale and a debate.
Yeah, even debate is a dirty word these days, because it's like, oh my goodness, after that Paul Vanderclay interview that I did, there were people in the comments section talking about, you know, like, oh, this is such a refreshing conversation compared to any other atheist talking to a Christian. And someone linked a debate between Matt Dillahunty. No, it wasn't even a debate. It was like a big time debater, Matt Dillahunty, like watching another podcast and commenting and tweeting about it and making a huge shitstorm about the whole thing, saying like, oh, these other atheists, they called me a name when he didn't really. But like these debaters, they don't understand what the other person is usually talking about. Like, Matt Dillahunty is the kind of guy who said, there's no evidence for God, so there's no God. And then the other person, any other person in a debate would say, that's not the right way to think about it. It's about faith. And he says, well, that's not reasonable. And you get two people talking two different languages to each other, you're not going to see any common ground. Like, they literally just don't understand the other side, and there's no explaining their side. It's just, we both have a question, I have an answer, you have an answer, and then saying my answer is right, yours is wrong, and vice versa, back and forth.
Or some people resorting to yelling, figure it out, and not doing any of the groundwork to actually establish why they might in fact be right. Like, if you're so right, why don't I already agree with you?
Yeah.
Some people just enjoy controversy.
Yeah, but it's like, no, we have enough controversy already. Like, let's solve some problems instead of creating new ones. Like, all you want to do is yell at people for believing the wrong thing. People are just going to yell at you. The medium is the message. You enter a screaming match, you're in a screaming match. You know what doesn't get solved in a screaming match? Anything.
Yeah. Last summer, I had to, like, completely cut one of my former friends out of my life because he was an activist, and he had posted on Instagram saying they needed supplies and resources for these activists who were camping and protesting in Toronto. And we got in an argument and it didn't go well. But it's like, so you're activists and you're protesting and you're camping in tents and you're in Toronto and you're driving up from your rich just outside of Toronto City to go camp, and I can't get funding for subsidized housing for the homeless population that needs food and lodging in my town and are living in tents. But you want me to bring you supplies so that you can continue to protest because you're an activist who's helping.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
I don't want it to sound like we're anti-protest either, because, you know, it's essential in any kind of democracy.
I'm anti-protest lifestyle. Like, if you are signing up to have a picket line for the next 50 years, like, you just sound like Big Pharma. You're in the business of people having problems and you standing up for them. Like, solve the problem.
Yeah.
Now.
And also, I like to add, is to know when to walk away from a conversation that's not getting anywhere. Like, we can think about what the other person is going through. Like, maybe, like, the idea of somebody rushing to the hospital to get their wife to get some treatment or whatever, or even the fact that you had to cut off one of your friends, Will. It is good to think about what they are thinking and what they're going through, but there has to be a point where it needs to completely end and not let that interfere with your goals in life. Not let it interfere with the story that you want to manifest in your life.
And I totally agree. And that was why I had to cut this person out, because they effectively sent me the Communist Manifesto and told me to figure it out.
Did you send them Atlas Shrugged in response? That's what I would have done.
No, I didn't. No, and it wasn't actually the Communist Manifesto, but it was like in the first two pages of this zine or whatever it is from the 90s called Settlers. They referenced the Communist Manifesto like 16 times. And it's like, I got 30 pages into this anecdotal piece of literature. And it's like, okay, so these people aren't even trying. And this is just absurd. Like, I think I had already, can't swear. I'd already complained about this. That's the word to you guys. And it's like, they were giving me a history lesson on the colonization of Jerusalem that started in 1970s or something like that. And I was like, I am reading the Old Testament and I'm very confused by what you're saying.
Yeah. Like, you can't use like your overall philosophy as an argumentation, because by definition, every philosophy has holes in it. You know, like, you can't debunk objectivism with Nietzscheism. You can't debunk, you know, the Bible with a science textbook. It's not how it works. It's philosophy. It's up in the air for a reason. Like, the only reason we have millions and millions of books on philosophy published is because, you know, the results are still out. We're still waiting on them.
We're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And when people get so bogged down in their own philosophy that they start creating new problems, like, we made these things to make solutions, and now you guys have created a space to just argue about how you're wrong and you're right. And it's like, that doesn't fix poverty. That doesn't fix homelessness. That doesn't fix crime.
Yeah, this is my critique of Christianity, because, you know, their goal is to get everybody under this umbrella of Christianity. But then you have the Catholics and the Protestant who have historically gone to war with each other over their disagreements on, you know, a couple passages in their book or, you know, anything. Like, it doesn't matter that much. Like, we don't have to kill each other for our belief system. We can fight about it, but you don't have to kill each other over it. But yeah, I don't know.
Makes you think in 100 years if we'll have a society that actually has like war games, because it's just something that we can't get out of us, where people are just like, yeah, I'm just gonna fight in the war games because I like to fight.
Yeah. I've noticed a lot that a 1984 or whatever has been trending on Twitter. It's like, yeah, I don't think we're quite there yet, but, you know.
I was just watching it.
At the same time, I don't think people are really talking about George Orwell's ideas when they talk about, you know, we're living in 1984, because I've also heard it said a lot that we're a lot closer to Brave New World than 1984, and I tend to agree with that line of thinking, because it's not like the actual oppression that is like keeping the books away from us. It's Aldous Huxley feared more that no one would want or feel the need to read a book about history, because they have all the answers. They're living in the Brave New World, and anybody who asks any questions gets shipped off the island. You know?
Yeah.
You're allowed to live with all of these other people now that you've broken this system. But, you know, Nietzsche talks about the same thing. We've broken our frames, all of them, by trying to find the right one. But, you know, we can't do much with a broken frame. We're trying to fix that frame as a humanity, but everyone disagrees on what that frame is going to be.
And it's like, just to lean into the metaphor, it's almost like we're so focused on the frame we forgot that it's holding up a picture.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well,
that's,
I think
that's
that...
a really, I like that a lot. That's poetic.
I like metaphors too.
George Orwell's 1984, I think, has been kind of trending since the election in 2016. But last year I did some side reading of this book called The Supernova Era by Liu Cixin. He's a Chinese author. I probably butchered his name.
Yeah, he, but also, in it, he also wrote the Three Body Problem trilogy.
The Three Body Problem and Big The fan. Wandering Earth. Yeah. Well, in that book, like, I'll try not to spoil it, but the kids end up picking up the tools of war that the adults left behind. And so they were almost implying that it's part of a natural adolescent stage of development to want to, like, fight with each other. But then you grow up as an adult and, you know, leave those things behind, things like delusion and greed and hatred of your fellow humans. And you can transcend that stage of adolescence where you're both, you know things, but you're stupid. Kind of like a sophomore stage.
Yeah.
Conscious incompetence.
Yeah, I've read an excerpt from that novel, but I haven't actually read the whole thing yet, so I wanted to get a hold of it.
Yeah, check it out. What are we reading coming up this year?
Well, the next, we're currently working through the Bible, and the next one we're doing, like the next whole novel we're doing, is going to be The Odyssey from Homer. After that, yeah. I'm not sure. We've got a couple of collaborations, possibly.
We've all got the wave, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pat, you said you got the new Jordan Peterson 12 More Rules?
I pre-ordered it.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, pre-ordered it. Okay.
Yeah. And of course,
I would really like to get...
I also got Matthew McConaughey's Green Lights.
And, I really want to get into the Epic Gilgamesh, though. I was just looking at the book list.
Yeah. I picked up the Koran not too long ago and the Epic of Gilgamesh, so I'm set. I've been actually going through the Koran, and I've, like, just random chapters that kind of pick up my interest, and it is not what I thought it was at all. Like, the same way that Will talks about the Old Testament, it's like... What am I reading? I don't know. Like, I need... It's like I need...
It's an adventure.
Yeah, I need like 5 other books to understand what's going on here. In the same way that, like, going through the Bible, I have to go through, like, all of these YouTube series and, Dr. Isaac Asimov's Guide to the Bible just to, like, get a little bit more perspective on this text. It's like, wow, just reading from the Quran itself, like, it sparks a lot of ideas, but I don't really know where it's all leading up to quite yet. So I'm looking forward to all these journeys. The Fountainhead is another one that I want to get into.
Yes.
I don't know if we're doing it this year or how long it'll take us to get to it / get through it, because
we gotta do it.
Yeah, it's necessary. It's necessary. Whether you're an objectivist or not, you have to understand objectivism. Because this is a woman who said her philosophy correspond with reality. And that's a hell of a claim to make. So,
mm-hmm. On that note, some Aristotle would be good to throw into,
yes,
the mix as well.
Nicomachean Ethics is another book I just picked up. So that's the one I think I want to start with. Beowulf was another one too. I want to get into some more mythology.
We can definitely do that. Yeah.
Be an interesting year.
Any closing thoughts? I mean, I can provide mine. it kind of goes back to what I was saying, which is just to not let any of the chaos affect your story. Yeah. Just manifest it as much as you can. Focus on that. That's what
I'm saying. I hear you, but like also, chaos is the story.
Yeah.
It is.
Like,
it has to be. Plan for the chaos.
We could,
and how you body surf the undertow.
We could almost define reality as just workable chaos. So, you know, finding that little bastion of order within that chaos, I think that's the necessary part that we're all, well, not we're all, but a lot of people are struggling with these days when they're, you know, the meaning crisis. I think that's what it's all about, is that balance between order and chaos. Like, you want to have order in your life, but at the same time, falling into a rut and doing the exact same thing every day, you're not exactly cooperating with reality as it exists. So you have to find that little middle ground. Maybe it's not in the middle. Maybe you need to use the golden ratio of like 80% order, 20% chaos. Maybe the other way around. Maybe the percentage is different for every individual, but you know, it's something we're all figuring out.
Be dangerous, but disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think in physics they call it entropy. It's ordered chaos. Mm-hmm. But chaos is the background, the static.
Word.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to leave off. But yeah, if you haven't already, check us out at our website at www.bookwave.club. We're here on YouTube. You can leave a comment down below. You can check us out on all of our audio versions, from Anchor FM to Spotify to Apple. We're on a good percentage of them. So until next time, may the force be with you.
Or equal to mass times acceleration.
Poof.
If you've gotten this far, follow the golden rule.
Beauty.